Hey y'all, I'm Kelly Bannon and I am filling in for our dear Kelly Henderson this week. Maybe you caught our first episode, which was The Velvet. I interviewed my husband, Jeff Grossman, who is a therapist. Honestly, it was kind of hard. It was kind of hard interviewing my man. I hadn't done that before. But I felt like we talked about some pretty cool stuff as it relates to therapy. He's a therapist. We talked about how to go about finding a great therapist and some of the conversations you navigate when you're entering therapy and things like that. Check it out if you missed it. And then today I've got something really special for you. I'm hype about it. But I was going to just contextualize this by saying, one, I think that Kelly Henderson is setting such a great example by taking some time off for herself. And I hope that on the other side of it, she is refreshed and just renewed with greater focus. I think we do idolize busyness. We think that busyness equates to importance. And I often do that in my own life. Like, how much do I have going on? Or like, when someone reaches out about getting together and I'm like, well, we're going to have to look in December. Like, do I feel pride that I'm busy? Like, that's gross. So I just appreciate Kelly kind of setting the tone here as far as mental health is concerned and just taking a second for herself. And like, if you're one of those people that needs permission to take a second, like I always need permission for everything, I'm giving you permission. This is your verbal permission. Go take a second for you. Say no to something for you so you can say yes to the things that really matter. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode. This is going to be the edge. It's going to be a little bit more playful. A teeny bit of context about me. I am a singer-songwriter here in Nashville, Tennessee. It's my hometown. I love welcoming people to Nashville, to my hometown. And then I also host a couple shows for Apple Music Radio. I host a daily show called The Kelly Bannon Show, which is just jams and a little bit of like insider baseball of the music business. And then on Fridays, I host a show called Today's Country. It's kind of the biggest headlines in country wrapped in music and thoughtful conversations with artists. It's really fun. But it all started because I had a podcast that I started about 6 years ago called This Nashville Life. And ultimately, actually, that might have been the reason that Kelly interviewed me for Velvet's Edge a few years ago. About that. And gosh, I have a ton of respect for her. I love her no bullshit kind of attitude. I wish I could embrace a little bit more of that ethos. And also, this is like one of maybe my favorite things is that she's a bit of like a doppelganger for me, which feels like a huge compliment. Like when she told me one time that people were confusing us, like, and our names are both Kelly, so that's kind of tricky. I was like beyond flattered, so thrilled, because y'all know she's got legs for days and who doesn't want to look like Kelly Henderson? So I will take it. But I'm afraid y'all can tell by my voice that we're not truly doppelgangers, because I'm way down here like baritone land and she's like a normal woman voice. But without further ado, we are going to sit down with one of my best friends, truly one of those people that I just see her face and my day is better. My life is better because I have her in it. And she also happens to be kind of a bookworm. So we're gonna stay on our therapy theme, but we're gonna talk about some fun reads in kind of the therapy book world. I'm pretty hyped. I'm really hyped to introduce everybody to one of my favorite humans, and maybe my favorite human on earth. And her name is Brenna Perkins. And if Jeff, my husband, who you guys met a few days ago on the Velvet side of the Velvet's Edge podcast, if he hears that, like, I won't even be embarrassed, because he knows that he's like second tier compared to, but seriously,
like, bestie.
Brenna is one of the sunniest, most charismatic personalities I've ever come across. Y'all know I work in the music industry. There's a lot of very charming people. And it just doesn't get more charming than Brenna, in my opinion. She's just she's my absolute. So
That is so kind. And you've also seen me at my worst, so thank you for saying that.
But here's what I was thinking. I would love for you to set up a little bit. Like, you have had your own moments in the bright, sparkly spotlight. So I would love to hear a little bit just about your story, if you kind of just give us the...
Sure. Well, I am originally from a small town in Wyoming that is the coal mining capital of the United States of America. And I think I've always been a city girl at heart, and I've always been a Southern girl at heart, as much as I love growing up there. So, like, I kind of always had these big, like, sparkly dreams outside of Gillette, Wyoming that I wanted to pursue. And so I moved to Nashville to go to Belmont University to pursue broadcast journalism in 2007. And Nashville just became my home, but I had always grown up doing theater and loving hair and makeup and all of those types of things. And so I knew that those were being on stage and pursuing, you know, exciting, glamorous things were things I wanted to do when I moved to Nashville. So I did some work as a hair and makeup artist. I did some work as a TV host. I was in pageants.
I'm always trying to get you to talk about the pageant life.
Kelly should have done a pageant. She does have a fascination with pageant life. And she looks great in a crown.
Here's the thing, and maybe this is from my late bloomers out there that are listening. Like, what is it about beauty pageants that I was always kind of like fascinated and a little horrified?
Probably because you have the swimsuit body.
No.
She knows how to be on stage.
No.
She's got a talent. She was made for the pageant world.
No. Honestly, I'm like, wait. I think at first when I was first meeting you, I was like, oh my gosh, like, can I be friends with a beauty queen?
You know what's funny though is it's like from doing theater, I think that's how I think of pageants. Is like I grew up going to them. The Miss Wyoming pageant was held in my hometown. I always went. We always watched Miss America. I loved it. And it never, ever occurred to me like, oh, I could do this, because like I wasn't glamorous. I didn't own an evening gown. Like I didn't know how to walk in high heels. But what I was very familiar with was theater and creating a character. And there's a lot of similarities between those two. And yes, you're showing up as yourself, but you're showing up as the beauty queen version of yourself. So it's like, do I wear fake eyelashes and have pageant makeup in my everyday life? No. But in that scenario, I loved it. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of similarities between like theater. So it is like a character that you create and you're wanting to like put your best foot forward. But it's like me on the pageant stage isn't like the me you're going to bump into at Kroger.
Well, here's what I'm curious about too, because I think I have set up in my life. Okay, guys. First of all, we aren't going to just only have serious talk today. We're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and tease this. Brenna is a bit of, I would call you a sexy bookworm. And we're going to talk specifically about like a subgenre of books that we're both really into that connect to our last podcast. But I do want to just like, there's some good meat on this bone here. So I just do want to stay here for a second and go, okay, so I feel like there have been a handful of milestones in my life, some of them that I've achieved and some of them that I haven't, that it's like I think if I hit them, I will feel this about myself. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if for you winning Miss Tennessee, was there like a question in your heart that you thought you would answer when you had that crown on your head?
For sure. I had done the Miss Teen USA pageant as the Wyoming delegate. And I feel like that gave me a lot of confidence and it gave me a lot of good things. And so when I knew that I was coming to Belmont for school, I knew that I wanted to pursue going to Miss USA as Miss Tennessee. And I kind of thought, you know, I've been to a national pageant before. I've got some experience under my belt. Like, I think I can do this. And then I showed up my first of 3 years at the Miss Tennessee pageant and I didn't even make the top five. And so it was very humbling. And I think was hard on my confidence in a way as well, because I was like, oh, maybe I don't have it.
Oh, gosh. Who out there connects with that thought? Maybe I don't have it.
And I think that all the time. That. Yeah. No. Yeah. And I probably still do to an extent. And so there's a way where I think maybe I was chasing that, like you said, for some validation. But I was like, oh, if I don't win on my first time, then I don't have it. Mm-hmm. And I almost didn't come back. And then what I realized, though, is that these Southern girls in pageants do not play around, and I had to get on their level. Like, they all have a personal trainer. They all have someone teaching them how to do the walk on stage. They have someone, a professional, helping them with their hair and makeup. Like, they have a professional for every aspect of the competition. And so I just knew that I had to get on their level. And then second year, still didn't have it. And so that third year, I finally won. And
wait, so you did? Did you place that second? What happened?
Yes,
that second
I moved,
year?
Okay. I placed higher every year. My second year, ironically, was probably my best year of competition ever, and I still didn't win. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting thing about pageants, being in the music industry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Anything where someone's opinion is going to determine like your fate. It's not how hard you work. It's not how well you do. It's really just sometimes like.
Timing.
In pageants, it's timing, and it's like, okay, you could have a panel of judges, and they might choose me one day, and they might choose you the next day. There's a lot of luck
They'd
involved
choose you
as well.
Every day.
No.
They would choose you consistently, I have no doubt. But, okay, see, that's interesting. That's a great parallel. Y'all know I'm a singer-songwriter, and a big question that I have, I mean, we talked about my therapy journey a little bit on the last episode. Like, I'm constantly want to grade myself, like, how good I am on the outcome, like, how well yes. my song did.
And that is in our minds, which is not true, the measure of, like, how talented we are or do we have it or whatever. Yep. And it's just, like, with your radio stuff, it's just like pageants. It's like, okay, well, what's already on the radio right now? What other female singers? What other... You know, there's all these variables that actually have nothing to do with your talent and how good the song is and how well you sang on it or any of the above. There's a lot of luck and timing involved.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm guessing that's probably true in a lot of business and a lot of entertainment business especially. Okay, tell us, okay, are there assumptions that people make about beauty queens or former beauty queens? Would you like to dispel any?
I mean, there definitely are, and I probably had some of those assumptions going into it too, especially as like this small town girl from Wyoming. I remember like walking into the ballroom of check-in day at Miss Teen USA, and there's like girls in their bikinis doing their photo shoots and this, and that. And so it's like, yeah, you're like, they're going to be stuck up. They're going to think they're better than everybody else. Are they going to be stupid? X, Y, and Z. And what I came to realize, of course, there are exceptions to every rule. But what I realized is that if you are the type of person who is ambitious, charismatic, articulate enough to show up and win your state pageant or even show up at your state pageant to begin with, there's probably going to be a lot of like-mindedness there. There's very few girls that show up just thinking – you know, that they're hot stuff and they've got it in the bag. Like, everybody's got insecurities
also,
they've got to contend
like?
With. Right. And somebody might act like that, but that's not what's actually going on under the surface. And so I've actually ended up connecting so much with so many of the people that I competed with. And to this day, so many of them are some of my closest friends. And it's like, man, if they could win over the judges, they can probably win you over too with their wit, their charm, their smarts, their beauty, all of that. So a lot of fantastic women in pageants, actually.
I was kind of just giggling thinking about you, Brenna, like have your own little vernacular. Like you have phrases that you and your people, you've like trained your people to use that are like our inside jokes. And one of those is like such as.
Did I say it and not even realize
No, you haven't said it yet. Y'all know like such as. Do y'all know? Can you?
If you don't know, please look up the YouTube video of Miss South Carolina Teen. That's all you have to type in and it'll come up.
Miss South Carolina Teen famously answered the big question.
Yes. I'm trying to even think what the question was. Maybe it was about education or access to like libraries or books.
Education.
And she just froze. And she just said, I personally believe that U.S. Americans don't have maps and the Iraq Antarctica, everything like such as. Oh, it said a lot of Americans can't locate the U.S. on the map. Why do you think this is? And she froze. I personally believe. I could recite like the whole thing from it. It was amazing. And anytime I can slip like such as into a conversation, I will.
Have you ever had that freeze moment on stage?
No, I freaking thrive, to be honest. I've had that moment in many other situations in life, but like you got me up there with two sets of false eyelashes on and a sparkly gown. And I've been working out for 3 hours a day for 2 months. I am in my element. Not to say it couldn't have happened. I didn't do it that many times.
That is funny. Oh, man. Okay. So I'm going to start to steer us in the direction of today's topic. So this is The Edge. The Velvet side of the Velvet's Edge podcast is a little bit more heart. We're gonna deal with a little bit of heart and a little bit of fun, a little bit of edge, too. I would love, because we're kind of picking up. So did I tell you I interviewed Jeff for the Velvet part of the podcast?
Obsessed.
It's funny.
I love Jeff so
much. We kind of
got
in a minor fight afterwards. Because I was like, oh, babe, I was like, you were so low energy. Like, he was very, you know how there's two versions of Jeff? There's the suey version of Jeff. It's a joke. It has to do with flatulence. I apologize. There's the suey version of Jeff, which is like hype. So hype. You're almost embarrassed to be with him. And then there's like I wouldn't say aloof, but like kind of low key. He was so low key. And I was kind of like, babe, like,
pump up.
We're doing a podcast.
I think there's something about being on a microphone, though, too, that is weird. Even if you've done it a lot, you're like, wait, so should I talk like this and be serious? Or do I need to, like, pump up the energy so, like, the fun comes through the microphone?
Yeah.
So it's hard to, like, just be yourself sometimes.
So we got in, like, a teeny fight. He told me that he was like, you kind of hurt my feelings when you graded me. I was like, well, no, you did a great job. But we did. We talked about kind of, like, demystifying therapy, the therapy process, how to find a great counselor who's a good fit for you, and kind of just his approach. So that was kind of cool. But and today we're talking specifically, there's been this kind of phenomenon in the last few years where a lot of therapy-centric books have hit the mainstream in a massive way. They've been New York Times bestsellers, or they're the subject of like a really big fiction, you know, novel. And so you are my resident bookworm. And I was thinking we could go back and forth about some of those books that people might be, if they're interested in therapy generally, these might be up their alley. But I'd love to contextualize the conversation by talking a little bit about your own therapy experience, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Totally, totally. I feel like the things that have typically led me to therapy in the past, one is improving relationships. And another one is I don't seem to handle change well.
Oh,
even if it's like a good change. You know, I think like being freshly out of college, I was having a quarter life crisis and just spinning out about that. And then I think also right after I got married, even though that was a great change, it was still a massive change. And it just made me go inward and really consider like how I grew up in my family of origin, and now I have my own family of origin, and what things do I want to bring forward into our home, and what things do I not want to bring forward into our home, and the things that I don't want to bring forward, how am I going to relearn those and hopefully try to do those better? And that was just weighing pretty heavy on me after we got married. So the change, and also just like wanting to improve relationships, but gosh, it's so layered the ways that it has benefited me from like learning to have boundaries.
That's, I think, a harder one for women in general.
Oh, for sure. And especially if you've ever had a person in your life that uses like guilt or shame as a way to motivate you or punish you. Or at least there's some of that in my story. So yeah, that's so hard. I think even just being able to name what's circling around in your head gives you the power, like naming it gives you the power to make some changes.
Actually, I don't know why, there is something about just naming it that takes some of the power away.
Absolutely.
Like if I have a lot of fear about something that's coming up, just putting words to that and being able to like, I'm feeling like a little frenzied and a little like for me,
it's
a lot of my
anxiety.
Yeah, my anxiety will be a little, it's like I just feel a little frenzied. And if I can slow down long enough and go, wait, I must be have fear about something, and saying it out loud, like, oh, I have fear about. Well, I don't know why that starts to take the power away, it does.
And if you can like feel heard in that at the same time, and somebody might
validate
you or help you through it or give you a piece of advice or whatever it is. What else do I have on my list? Oh, this is a big one for me, that other people's opinions of me aren't always true and they don't define me.
Wait.
That's been a big thing. That's
other people's opinions of me are not always true and
they
don't define me. Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
What's one of your biggest takeaways?
I would just more characterize a lot of my early therapy journey, especially was realizing that I had to do work to figure out who I was.
Oh.
And that it wasn't intuitive, that I felt very lost and I was trying to be things for other people. So I would spend a lot of time reading the room to be what the room wanted me to be, whatever the metaphorical room may be, instead of reading myself to know what I was feeling or who I was in that moment. So a lot of my early work in therapy was like developing a self.
Oh, that resonates with
crazy.
Me so much. Like, I feel like that's like work I'm doing
it's still,
right now.
I'm and, still doing that. That's long work. But and then just realizing how much shame honestly, the other thing is y'all, I don't know if y'all have, if anybody out there that's listening to us suffers from any kind of anxiety. If you have just always had a low hum to a mid hum of anxiety in your life, as long as you can remember, you actually don't know you suffer from anxiety. You just think that's what it's like to walk around the world. And so when I started to realize, oh, wait, that's not normal. Oh, the reason that I want to throw up and quit every time I have to go out on stage to do the thing that I love is like, that's actually my anxiety talking, and that it's not more true than like, but there's a way where your anxiety makes you feel, or your shame or whatever, like it's screaming the loudest in that moment of like, I am what's true about you, and it's not. So, yeah. This kind of reminds me of your first one is other people's opinions of me are none of my business.
And here's what I'm trying to work on right now is I saw that Katie Kirk put out a t-shirt that says, I'm not for everyone. I'm trying to be okay with not being for everyone because I'm like very people pleasing. And I sincerely like a lot of people and want to be friends with everybody. That's kind of my personality. And I don't have to be for everyone.
That's a hard one. And I don't know if Kelly's audience is more male or is more female than male. My assumption is yes, but I don't know. So y'all tell us. But I think that's a specifically hard one for women too. It's like, but by being for everyone, you're kind of not for anyone.
Right.
And so I think being cool with, in fact, I think Kelly embraces that really well. Like, yeah, it's kind of a fuck the haters moment. It's like, yeah, I'm just legit not going to be for everyone. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean something's wrong with me. And it doesn't mean something's wrong with you. It's just like, yeah. So, okay. So today I think we're going to talk, I know we're going to talk about three books in particular. We might get to a fourth, but I was going to start with one that we have, unless you want to do this like a fourth grade book report, which I would be into. Did you bring any
you're the boss.
poster boards?
With, no, I did not.
I was thinking, what if we talked about the book group? Who have hung with us from the first episode, we actually talked about how Jeff is a group therapist and does a lot of group work. If you're kind of curious about group dynamics, there is a book called Group, How One Therapist in a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life by Christy Tate that we both read this year and we both loved.
Devoured it. It was, so I had really never thought much or really knew much about what group therapy was until we became friends and you told me a little bit about what Jeff did. And so I already had an interest in it. And this book is kind of interesting compared to some of the other ones that we're going to talk about because this is written from the perspective of
a client.
Patient, someone in therapy, whereas the other books we're going to discuss are written from the perspective of the therapist. And Christy Tate is almost like alarmingly honest. And I think that's something that draws you into the book because it's like if she's feeling it, she's saying it in therapy and she's experiencing it. And it's just there's a lot of bravery with how honest she is and how much she discloses.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so many cool things about the dynamics of airing your dirty laundry in a group of people because as they're having realizations about their own stuff, there's all these themes, these human themes, and what you might be dealing with is totally different from me, but like the human heart connection of it or the heart of the matter is the same.
The same. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think that is so cool about what you get to witness in this book is there is this sort of unabashed, healthy groups, healthy therapy groups are shockingly honest. It's like, this is a group of people you aren't friends with. You don't have to caretake your relationship with them in the same ways that we do in sort of typical social settings. So you can say the true thing. It doesn't mean you're going to be unkind, but you can be a very real, very unfiltered version of yourself because everyone in the group is committed to the confidentiality. If you break confidentiality, the way normal therapy groups work, if you break that confidentiality, you have to come back and tell the group about it. Oh. Hey, I told my wife that this, that, or the other thing about you. It's like, and then the group is like, deals with it together. I would say too, as just like, I don't know how you guys out there pick your books. I usually just read whatever Brenna tells me to, but this was a Reese's Book Club choice. It was a New York Times bestseller. The therapist who's kind of the center of this book, I think the name has changed, but he is a real therapist in Chicago who is very well known in the group world. Jeff had actually has been at like some conferences where he has been in attendance, and he looms large. But
he seems to be a polarizing figure. Like, as I was reading the reviews on this book, I loved it. But he seems to be a polarizing figure.
I think that's what makes him interesting in this. And I think that's actually, you know, maybe that's an element of good therapists to
it's
the
a little
point
provocative.
They're a little provocative and they're not for everyone. Like, to hop on our last point, it's like, you are really looking for someone that helps you get what you're looking for. And that's not going to be for everyone. And there was a quote from this in like one of the synopses. It was like, Dr. Rosen I don't think that's his real name. That's his name in the book. And issues a 9-word prescription for Christy. And it is, you don't need a cure. You need a witness.
I wrote that
down. Did you write
that
down too? Isn't that, why does that just get me in my heart? It punches me in my heart balls.
When I was kind of like rereading the synopsis of the book, because it's been a bit since I've read it, that punched me. And it was almost like I was hearing it for the first time, because I think sometimes my mindset going to therapy or my mindset telling my best friend my problems is like, what's the cure? And it's like, often we really don't need the cure, or there's not going to be a cure today, or there may never be a cure. But like, for somebody to witness, for somebody to hear, for somebody to listen, value, whatever it may be, is like, there's a lot of power in that.
I think this hits on a really important theme that, like, you know, I think you could bring into friendship whether you are like a therapy person or not, which is, most people don't want to be fixed. And actually, most people don't need to be fixed. Like, I come to you with my problem, I'm not actually looking for you to tell me how to fix it. I just need to know that someone that cares about me heard me in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's that kind of like cure versus witness. It's like, just be with me in it.
Right.
Don't solve it for me. So highly
but
recommend.
I usually want you to solve it for me.
Okay. Noted. Noted. But I think y'all, it's pretty fast paced. You become really attached to and intrigued by the other
yes.
characters in the group. And she is very, very honest. And
and witnessing her real transformation is really compelling to me.
Yes. So that is Group, How One Therapist and a Circle of Strangers Saved My Life by Christy Tate.
Read it.
Okay. Yeah, y'all. Okay, let me see. I want you to rate these, and I want you to rate them on a scale from, I'm trying to think of something funny and inside our personality. Okay, I want you to rate them from 1 to 5 tinctures. Brenna is always like doing tinctures and things for her wellness. 1 to 5 tinctures.
Oh my gosh. I'm a really generous judge. And okay. These are some of my favorite books.
Okay.
I went on my Goodreads today to see how I rated them. I think I rated all these books a 5.
Okay, a 5 tinctures. Okay.
5 tinctures.
This next.
Cat's paw, nettle, lemon balm, ashwagandha, carry on.
This is a book I haven't read. Jeff is reading it right now. You've read it. It's everywhere. It's a New York Times bestseller. It's called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist and Our Lives Revealed by Lori Gottlieb.
Oh,
tell
so
me all
good.
About it.
Okay, of every book that I have recommended to friends, this one has come back the most popular, which a friend actually recommended it to me. And I was like, oh, this is right up my alley. I devoured it. In my Goodreads review, I said, I'm going to have to grieve the fact that this book is over and that I'm not going to spend any more time with these characters. And I also wrote, I already know that I will reread it. I have recommended this book to so many friends, and every single friend that has read it has come back raving about it.
Okay.
So I'm
why?
Actually really curious,
like,
to
give
know
us
Jeff's
the
review
why?
As a professional.
Yeah, I need to follow up with him about it. If I was a more prepared podcast host, I would have said, have you finished that book yet?
Nah.
Okay, why though? Why sell me? Why
okay.
do I want to? I know you love it. I know everybody else loves it.
Okay.
What am I getting out of it?
It's another true story, which is interesting. Like, for me, that's just compelling when it comes to this type of thing, because I think there's so much real-world application. And I think that's the benefit of, going back to our last book, of group therapy, which this isn't group therapy, but you feel like it is in a way because you're inside the therapy room with so many people. So there's Lori, and she's a therapist in real life. She's, like, changed the names and meshed some of the stories to keep people's lives confidential so that you couldn't pick it out. But she is counseling these different people through various things in their lives. She has, like, a narcissist. She has a severely depressed person who says they're going to commit suicide by their next birthday if their life doesn't turn around.
Ooh.
There is a young, newly married woman with a terminal illness. There's just so much going on. But then she goes through this massive life change, and so she starts going to therapy. And I think when you read and listen to and pay attention to other people's stories, especially in this context where people are doing the work and striving to get better, there are just so many insights about your own life. Like, I learned things about myself from reading about the characters in this book.
Like what?
Oh my gosh. Okay, it's also been a while since I read this one. I'll have, let me think on that.
Or you found it, like, you found yourself learning.
I saw myself
yourself,
in
you
it.
Saw yourself in
I
it. Okay.
Yes.
That's helpful.
Yes.
Also,
gosh, it was good.
It was Oprah Magazine Best Nonfiction Book of 2019. It apparently is being developed into a TV series. Do we know anything about that?
No, but gosh, I hope they don't mess it up because the book was so good.
So that's maybe you should talk to someone, a therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives
Six
Revealed.
Out of five tinctures.
Six out of five tinctures. Okay, third is...
That's a good intro book. Like, I think that's a good book to start with.
Oh, start there. All right, folks. If you, like, of this list, start there.
Yeah, I think start there.
Okay, this third book on our list is one we both read. I probably read it... I always get an, without fail, January, I want to be my best self. And I'm
Absolutely.
Like, I'm going to read, and I'm not going to watch TV this year. And I read, like, six books in January. I read a book in February, and then I don't read again.
And then it tapers off, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
So I read this in January or February. It's called Good Morning Monster. You've probably seen it because it has this, like, fried egg on the cover. I feel like I was seeing it everywhere. Good Morning Monster, a therapist shares five heroic stories of emotional recovery. It's by Catherine Gildener. Gildener?
I think so. I think that's how you say it.
And so Catherine was a psychologist for 25 years and then...
Very renowned, I believe, from what I read.
And then at 50, we love a woman chasing her dreams at any age.
Yes.
And then at 50, she left private practice to become a writer and then wrote a couple of bestsellers, memoirs. I think she has maybe one novel. And then this is, I think, her most
think
recent book.
Yeah.
Good Morning Monster. One thing I love, provocative title, right? I'm immediately like, what is that? So lay it out. Lay out this book for us.
Gosh, okay. I think I read this one over Christmas. Kind of a heavy book to read over the holidays, to be honest. Don't know if I would recommend, but I could not put it down. I read it in 24 hours. It is, again, real life tales of people who have just overcome what you would not think that anyone could overcome. Like, think of child abuse. Think of child neglect. I mean, just like the hardest, most painful, traumatic experiences that you could endure in life. She's counseling these people through over a period of years and years,
mm-hmm.
and watching them transform and live healthy or healthier, productive lives and be happy and go on to, like, lift themselves out of, I mean, really incest deep, dark
and rape.
Things.
I mean,
yes. I mean,
and then, you know, and just in trauma. For me, one thing, and we touched on this on the other podcast episode where I introed and interviewed my husband, Jeff Grossman. We talked a little bit about client-therapist relationship. This is one of those books where you see how deeply she cares for her patients, which kind of gives you, it's like, oh man, like, I don't know. I feel like it's almost good for, it's good for therapy overall because it's like, it shows you this glimpse into like how deeply someone, like they're not just taking your $175
right.
And it's like she cares deeply for her clients. She gets counsel on how to help them and she's rooting for them in this deep and beautiful way. And then she knows that in sharing their stories, like it gives you, well, one, what is it, Brenna? Like there is something about when we can, I don't know. Sometimes I think we have our own pet traumas and it's like my trauma is so big. No one can understand it.
Right.
But then you see other people's trauma. There is something normal. It's like, oh, wow. You know, truly everyone is carrying their own burden.
Totally.
And there is something kind of normalizing about just like suffering is real and hurt is, and, you know, but probably one of the more provocative characters is where the title comes from.
Right.
Will you tell, without totally giving it away, can you tell us like where the title comes from?
Do you remember? A girl growing up in privilege, I think in New York,
mm-hmm.
and she is greeted by her mother every morning. Her mom says to her, "Good morning, monster." Like her.
Good morning, monster.
Her mom wasn't for her.
her mom wasn't being cheeky.
No.
She was like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's truly.
Told this, every day that you're a monster by your primary caregiver and your primary attachment figure.
Yeah. I also, it was one of those, couldn't put it down. Very, very hopeful. Even though it's got really, there are some really hard, devastating
heavy.
Scenes. It is a story. It ultimately is a story of healing.
Yes.
And she's a great writer.
Ugh, so good. It makes me want to read her other books.
How many tinctures?
Five tinctures.
Sure. So we're going to recap. So far, we've covered group. which we gave five tinctures to. We covered maybe you should talk to someone.
Six
out of five tinctures.
I'm not sure how that can happen, but it did.
Good morning, monster gets five. I was going to say another book that we both read, if y'all are looking for some fiction, was a psychological thriller called The Silent Patient. And I really don't know how to explain it without giving too much away. It's, how would you pronounce this author's name? Alex Michaelides?
Yep,
maybe
that's it. That's
I'm making that up. But the Silent Patient, in this case, one, it's just like if you're into therapy, the primary character is a therapist who's obsessed with uncovering sort of the violent history behind his patient.
Who happens to be a famous artist.
And won't speak.
And she had been a part of a crime. And ever since the crime happened, she refuses to speak. So he's obsessed with getting her to speak and uncovering the story behind the crime. But it's like a mystery.
And there's a twist.
Of every book I've read like that, I did not see that ending coming. I don't know if you did.
I didn't either. I feel like I can see around some of the curves.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So The Silent Patient, if you're looking for some fiction, really good read. Honestly, it would be a great read right now because it's a little spooky. Mm-hmm. Be fun to like curl up by the fire, get under a blanket. What is on your bookshelf of
four out of five tinctures, just to keep it interesting.
Okay, 4 out of 5 tinctures. I might give it, I really enjoyed that
book.
Yeah,
I loved it. I definitely gave it 5 stars on Goodreads.
It's less of like a, you're not going to like wrap that book up and give it to your daughter as an inspiring story, which you really truly might do with like group or maybe you should talk to someone, but it was a great read.
Yeah. Fun. It was a fun read.
Yeah. Yep. like a heady beach read.
Yeah. I agree.
What is on your bookshelf to be read or to be finished that we want to read?
Okay. So I'm really into wellness in general. And I've kind of been on this wellness journey for the past like 5 years trying to overcome some autoimmune stuff. And in the last year, I have started going to this functional medicine doctor, and he is the first practitioner I've been to that has brought it to my attention that like your overall wellness and your overall health, there is like, he as an MD acknowledges that your emotional health, it plays a huge role in the physical health of your body. Mm. And so through going to him and other practitioners that he recommended, it was like every practitioner that he was sending me to, I'm just curious and I'm always getting to know people when I'm in the room and we're chatting. Almost every single one of them recommended a book called The Body Keeps the Score.
I think I legit have it on. Yep, I have it. You're going to hear some cranky sounds of my bookcase opening.
We getting it out.
I have it. It's got kind of like a moody figure on the front. It's kind of like cool pop art. The Body Keeps the Score. Brain, Mind, and Body in the Healing of Trauma by Bessel van der Kolk.
That's a lot.
Bessel van der Kolk, MD. What can you tell us about it? Obviously, I haven't read it yet.
I've only read chapter one. It is a heady book with a lot of scientific information. The first chapter was all about like the history of treating mental illness and PTSD and when they uncovered and named what PTSD was. And it was fascinating.
Yeah.
But also like there's only so much of it that you can like really take in at a time. Whereas these other books, if you've got like the time on a Saturday in the bathtub, as I often do, you could devour them. This one is not one I think that you could devour, but I think there's a lot of like practical, very interesting information. And like reading the summary, it seems like there are
like literally it's unpacking the places where like in your own trauma story, from what I understand, and I haven't read this book, but one a therapist that I worked with said trauma actually affects your genetic material and can be passed down to generations. So that would mean trauma that my grandparents endured mm-hmm. is written in the DNA that I carry.
Mm-hmm. But this book is arguing that there's coping mechanisms. And oh. I'm all for like a prescription if that's needed. But I think one of the things that this book is talking about is like through mindfulness and through like connecting with your own body and even like certain types of like yoga and movement or EMDR or these okay. different types of, and I think mindfulness is a huge thing that you can, through those things that you can become healthy. And obviously that's not true in every situation, but like really interesting.
So that's on the want to, we'll report back with how many tinctures out of five, but this book has been.
It might take me a while.
It's been everywhere. Is there anything else? Like, you know, we're not going to cover in depth, but I was going to say, I know people. I think Kelly has talked about the Enneagram before on the podcast, so maybe The Road Back to You would be a good rec. That's a great book. If you are interested in just exploring Enneagram, and that is it's a sort of type of personality test, a lens to look at personality types through. And that's kind of the formative, the foremost book on that topic. But
they also have another book called The Path Between Us that is about relationships between different numbers, which is also interesting stuff. If you're just interested in like the human condition, why do we do what we do and what motivates us and why do we go to this place when we're unhealthy and why when we're healthy, you know, do we do these other things? It's fascinating.
Yes. Well, Brenna, do you have any parting words before we wrap up this episode of The Edge? Should we do this every week?
I'm thriving. I'm having the best time.
Thanks
for having me.
Y'all,
I haven't used that broadcast journalism degree in a bit. Oh, it feels nice.
Honestly, I'm going to raise my glass to you. We're drinking some seed lip because your girl overindulged last night. And I just know at 40, those hangovers, they hit hard. And I can't go a bunch of nights in a row. I don't know about y'all. I'm trying to make my therapist says it, giving a gift to my future self. Mm. When you do the thing, the 5-minute thing that actually makes your day better later or makes tomorrow a little better, it's like I'm giving a gift to my future self. I'm giving a gift to my future self by not whining and boozing with you right now, but we're just drinking a little seed.
But it feels like we're having a cocktail.
It sure does. So I'm raising my glass to you, Brenna. You're just absolutely one of my most treasured people. I'm so thankful for you on a daily basis. Loves ya.
Here's to you.
To Let's you.
Do more. What would I do without you?
Clink. Kelly, thank you so much for asking me to host while you're away. I'm so glad that you're taking some time for yourself, and I'm encouraged by that. And I need to look at my own life and figure out where I need to do the same. I want to give you guys the opportunity to follow Brenna on socials. So Brenna, will you tell us where the gang can follow you if they are interested in those tinctures?
I am at Brenna M. Perkins on the gram and the Twitter, even though I don't use it. So just find me on the gram if you want.
That's right.
I post a lot of dog content.
We're here. We love it. That's where we're here. That's why we come. That's why we come to the gram. And of course, y'all can follow me at Kelly Bannon in all the places. And I'm so thankful that you spent this time with us. And yeah, it was just
what a treat.
Fun to try something new. Fun to put my podcasting headphones back on. And of course, wishing Kelly all the best. Can't wait to see her back after her rest. Mm-hmm.